This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
This is a 60-year-old gentleman with a history of diabetes, end-stage renal disease, on dialysis, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, PAD, who presented to the vascular surgery clinic right before Christmas with a black toe. He had an inciting event that led to the black toe. He was chasing his dog at the beginning of December, and over the course of a few weeks, it just continued to get darker and darker. He went to a Kaiser ED, where they treated him with betadine paint, sent him on a PO course of antibiotics, and recommended that he see a vascular surgeon. So he presented like this to our clinic. A little bit more about him. Again, his illnesses, as you can see, his medications. He had a fistula last year, and he had Charcot reconstruction on his foot in 2010. You can see his x-rays here with all broken screws, and he has a 30-pack year history of smoking. My physical exam, he did not have a cellulitis. He was afebrile. He did not have a leukocytosis. Clearly, you can see dry, stable gangrene of the second toe. His vascular exam, he was non-palpable. He had non-palpable pedal pulses. He had monophasic DPPT. His non-invasive studies, you can see below here. His toe pressure was 32, and his Wi-Fi stage was 3. Okay, I'll open it up to the panel. How would you proceed with this patient? Vascular and podiatry, maybe vascular first?
Well, I think the good news is that he had a successful Charcot reconstruction, and you don't get Charcot without adequate circulation, so you got to know that 2010 he had adequate circulation. So we know that this has progressed in this later stages. That's the good news. The bad news is that he is also on dialysis, and dialysis gives you that more distal, as Joe pointed out and Mike pointed out, the intrapedal disease that we're seeing more of. So obviously you can do lots of studies here, but in my opinion, I would do an angiogram straight away with three views of the foot.
Okay, very good. Here we go. That's what happened. He was admitted to the vascular surgery service and had an angiogram. And I can pass that off to maybe Dr. Gasper since he...
All right. Well, as you can see, he actually has a very large exophytic plaque in his common femoral artery. I don't know if you can point to that, Nicole, but he did have a palpable pulse, but realized that a little bit distal to this, it actually became significantly weaker. Then you can see his SFA is patent but heavily calcified. And if we go to the next, he's got this very heavily calcified popliteal and then this focal occlusion there in the above knee pop. And then down below in the tibial arteries, he's got anterior tibial runoff and his TP trunk is reasonable, but then his posterior tibial and peroneal are sort of small. And if we go to the next, then both of these, posterior tibial and peroneal, are coming down to the ankle, but really it's his anterior tibia that's dominant until it gets to the ankle, and you kind of get a sense here. Unfortunately, we just have the lateral view, but it really is kind of stopping as a bunch of small collaterals, but, you know, perfusing the dorsal surface of his foot. You can also see that his peroneal is providing a posterior branch there to what's left of his posterior tibial.
Okay, thank you.
What that is
that's a little bit of a Photoshop magic to try and get that plaque to show up.
So that's where I think ultrasound helps you, because you see those exophytic plaques all the time, right? So they're not all hemodynamic significant, if it's not. And so what's this waveform, the SFA, and the lovely pop like?
We don't have the waveforms there. No, that he had that focal occlusion.
Above that.
Well, right. I mean, up sort of a distal SFA, yeah. He had a...
Like that look ugly, but when you look at the hemodynamic part of it, it's not that significant, so I wouldn't mess with that if it didn't
So Joe, you've got the common femoral lesion, you've got the distal the above knee popliteal lesion, you got that the anterior tibial artery lesion. So you got three there. So so the question now becomes: do you take care of one, two, or three of them? I'm retired, so you'll have to answer.
Yeah, he was chasing his dog. He's 60 years old. He was pretty. Yeah, he retired recently, but he was an active guy. He is an active guy.
Can you repeat that?
Oh, so
if the common femoral lesion were significant, I would endarterectomize that. That popliteal lesion is really focal. I'm pretty sure I can get that open. And I'd leave the foot alone and see what my reperfusion was like before I did anything else. This is dry.
That was dry, correct, yeah.
That might be enough. Because I've seen lots of fetal disease like this. If you don't always know what's going to happen when you do the top part. If it's not enough, then you go back and
have. Why not just do the top part alone?
There you go.
That's the
course
we
should get. So everybody who's on the panel is typing in. I'm not thrilled with that calcified popliteal lesion. I think you can get it open. I don't think it's gonna look very good. And I think this guy doesn't have this nerve also got his ischemic gangrenous toe. So I think short bypass graft would be a better solution.
Okay. But he's got that origin anterior lesion, anterior tibial lesion. You're not going to leave that, are you, Mike?
Yeah. I am. I'd be happy to do the common femoral artery at the same time as do a femoral.
Okay. That's what happened?
Well, right. So as it turns out, this guy, you know, we actually randomized him to best CLI. And in keeping with my cosmic wishes, he was randomized to open. So we did a femoral endarterectomy and then ended up, his conduit was a little bit on the short side, so we did a dog. We came off his mid-SFA to below knee pop.
He also had a concurrent second toe amputation, yeah. Which I closed because he had decent perfusion and his met head looked clean.
He's got a pretty bad toe deformity, so he's going to be at risk for having more of that, right?
Yes. So here's post-op day 3. He was discharged on PO antibiotics. He had home health services change his dressing 3 times a week and then came into clinic 1 week later with a dehisced surgical site, which I don't have a picture for, unfortunately. There was 5 of us in the room and nobody thought to take a picture, but just because you can't see it. So he dehisced his surgical site. His second metatarsal head was looking at us. I could probe to his third metatarsal head and the tissues were more so dry. He really didn't have purulent drainage, a little bit of purulent drainage, but at that point, you know, his ischemia had progressed and the you know, we were worried about an infection at that point in his foot. So
did he get a DP pulse after the bypass or some sort of distal pulse beyond the AT origin?
Yes, he actually had a palpable AT pulse right above his ankle, but then, you know, you lost it as it became the DP on the dorsum of the foot. But he
kept his popliteal pulse. So
yes.
His graft was open, and mm-hmm. the lesion that was not bypassed occluded or became dysfunctional.
No, I think it was more that he didn't have a true DP going onto the dorsum of his foot.
He had
a palpable AT above the ankle.
When this happened?
Yes.
Okay.
How did the toe bleed when you took it off?
It was actually pretty decent. That's why we closed it and did not leave it open. At the sulcus.
As it got infected, mm-hmm. did the drain it, the blood supply may be okay, so I'd reassess the blood supply. That's the first thing I did. The second issue is just timing. So usually, if it's a dry lesion like that, but
why does it make sense?
Because you don't have to bring the patient back.
Other than that.
The argument against it is that you don't always know how much reperfusion you're going to get immediately when you haven't corrected everything. So there is an argument. seen that with SPY, where your initial indocyanine green is better, but not as good as it is a week later. So sometimes it's better to wait a little bit.
Have you had the experience that when you revascularize them and don't do the amputation but wait a few days, that they demarcate and you wind up taking off less?
I've had the experience they demarcate, and it makes it more clear. I think that thing of waiting for 3 days or 5 days or 7 days just arbitrarily is kind of BS. But some patients, it's hard to predict, especially if you haven't fixed everything, right? You don't know what you're going to get, because some of that perfuse is going to be through collaterals, which take a while to open up, leaving all those choke vessels. So sometimes if you wait a few days, you actually, physically you'll see it, because the foot doesn't always warm up immediately. And also, if you measure toe pressure or even signing green or haven't used much PCPO2, but your maximal perfusion benefit isn't immediate. Sometimes it takes,
especially if you're really tolerant.
Yeah.
Right. Where by definition, you're going to be in the border zone.
Mm-hmm.
It might be nice to wait when you're near the border zone of the ischemia for a couple of days, just to let it declare itself. Because when you do that resection, you're going to be sewing your going to be putting your sutures in that area.
Right. So just to sort of summarize here, the discussion is whether or not to do a concurrent versus a delayed toe amputation, and sort of what is going to demarcate and just what the extent of the ischemic and or infected tissue is. And I think in this case, we sort of underestimated exactly the extent of his tissue necrosis.
So am I hearing this, Joe, that you would wait majority of the time when you have a situation with a truly scheming dry toe without any foul load or without any wetness?
Go back. So that's not gangrene yet. It's going to be gangrene. But sometimes you get reperfusion injury. That happens in other organs, and it also happens in the foot. So
you're talking about this one?
No.
Are you talking about this one?
The one I showed earlier in my case, that lady had a black toe. It was already demarcated completely. So the fact that it's demarcated already tells you a little something about her circulation. That patient, I think, is safer to go immediately. This one...
It's still demarcating. That's what you're saying.
Let it be.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Okay, so we brought him back into the hospital. His graft was patent, and we performed a transmetatarsal amputation.
And,
I don't think we did repeat them at that point.
We did, and it is MIA.
We don't know where it is.
We checked it. He actually had an improvement. He had gone up to a toe pressure. He was originally 32. He had gone up into sort of the high 50s, maybe 60 range. Again, still had a palpable pulse of the AT at just above the ankle.
Oh, I can't get used to this thing either. Okay. All right. So here, post-op day 3, after his transmetatarsal amputation, and we have this. So my question is, do you still think that this is a salvageable foot?
I asked for an angiogram before. I'll ask again.
Can I ask why there was closure over necrotic margin?
Sure. So I was not... This was not... done by me. It was done by someone else on staff, and he reported to have had good perfusion to the foot, did not see any areas of infection, so he was, again, primarily closed.
I definitely think it's still salvageable. The closure wasn't done on viable tissue, so.
Okay.
This isn't immediately post.
No, this is 3 days. I mean, I don't think he quite looked necrotic like that. I wasn't there.
If you put on a transmet, that soon, you'll never get a big deal. So transmets, for the patients that need them, can be a block, especially if you don't know your patients. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, everyone, you get a little worried when you're doing a TMA and you don't have direct flow into the plantar artery, right? You go back to that original picture, and there's a lot of disease at the ankle and foot, and now you're worried that every time you cut into this foot, a little more is dying.
Yeah.
But if you really look at this foot, it looks like most of the plantar flap looks healthy. Mm-hmm. So I do think that it's salvageable. I think that it's not going to tolerate anything like too much tension, poor control of edema, or any kind of beating up. But I think it's still salvageable, but you got one shot left,
right,
probably, to yeah. save this foot. And you're going to potentially have to tolerate an open wound or a soft tissue defect for a little bit. But you still have a lot of plantar flap left. Mm-hmm. But I'm worried because I, as a vascular surgeon, I can't make that plantar flap circulation much better than it is because the anatomy is not conducive. So...
So
when you palpate the flap, is it adherent or is it open?
So so this little area right here was not, it was soft, so it didn't look that good.
But the rest of it seems like the flap's adhering?
Yeah. Like over here, it was adhering. Over here, I think more in this area we were worried about. We actually opened him at the bedside, and this is what we saw. That gives you a better picture of what his actual tissues looked like. So I again came in, and then I revised his stump here. And this is post-op day one. This is like probably post-op day two or three. I took back his med heads. I cut off the necrosis that you could see in the picture prior to. And this is how we did.
Did you back this?
Yeah, eventually I did, yes. So it was difficult to maintain his parabola. We couldn't go that far because of all that hardware in there. We couldn't touch it. The screws were broken. You really didn't want to take it out. One, to make a new incision and, you know, to take out broken hardware would not be fun. So we were limited in how far we could go back. So, like I said, I took him back, debrided him, and then a few days later debrided him again and put it back on. And this is what we got. This is what we were left with.
So let me ask a question. Seeing this gray granulation tissue, it looks like it's really healthy at the open TMA level. In retrospect, what can we say about, did we do something wrong? Could this have healed at the toe amputation level initially, or was this doomed to failure and TMA should have been the first and last amputation to perform on the get-go? Can anybody address that?
Just a question. Do you use transcutaneous oxygen tension to help determine amputation levels? Is that something in your toolbox?
We don't have that. We don't use it.
You know, the closest thing we've got is skin perfusion pressure, the Sensolace machine. It's just that is incredibly variable. I've had completely normal numbers on the dorsum of the foot and, you know, basically unreadable numbers on the plantar surface. And I don't quite know what to make of that. So,
Dr. Andros?
I wouldn't be pointing fingers at anybody. This is a worst case scenario. This is a guy that's had a charcot reconstruction, and you don't know what effects the charcot reconstruction did to the vasculature on the medial aspect of the foot when they did that. And on top of that, he's got God's greatest curse, which is end-stage renal disease on dialysis, and those are the worst patients. And you shouldn't be pointing fingers at anybody on those. But I think this really looks pretty good right now, and I just keep that vac on there, and I think that ultimately you're going to get a foot that looks good enough that it'll take a while. You're starting to cover the med heads, and I think it'll get good enough so that you can kind of swing the plantar skin that you've got up, and you'll be able to put a skin graft on that, I think.
No, I appreciate that. My question is really in relationship to dialysis. When we're dealing with specifically dialysis patients with such severe arterial disease, should we just go to a TMA, or do you think that for toe amputations or re-amputations have a good success rate in your experience?
No, I think your decision-making process was a good one. Just let me give you one thought. The best place to make friends is in a dialysis unit. So go to your nephrologist and tell them that I'm willing to send somebody over who's really very smart and has eyes and is willing to take the shoes and socks off of every patient in the dialysis unit once a month. I'll come there. We'll look at the feet together. And what you do is you educate the patient, you educate the dialysis people, and you got a chance to pick up early lesions. And we did that for a while, and we would run across people that had ulcerations. So if you can work out a program, you know, we were all talking about programs and teams, you might have an adjunct person going around to dialysis units once a month and trying to pick up those lesions, because I assure you that it's a good place, a good thing to do.
We're still struggling to find a tool that predicts where the amputation is going to heal, right? So I think everyone's trained to preserve length in the foot, and if it's not dead and it's not excessive, you're going to try to do foot spare, you know, foot length, keep the length of the foot there. But typically we ask you, how was the bleeding? Well, that seems like a ridiculous question today in 2017 that we would ask you, how was the bleeding? And expect that to be, you know, the determinant of how it goes. It's either it could be robust or it could be terrible. Those are pretty obvious. And then this sounds like it was kind of in the middle. So the question is, if you're in the middle and you have a patient who really doesn't have much tolerance, and I'll use the example of even a transplant patient who's immunosuppressed, it's not going to work. It's not going to work, right? Because you really need to have really good circulation, really clean wound, really no tension. Maybe in that case you go right to the TMA, because when it's dicey and you got someone who's on immunosuppression, it's not going to work. But these kind of cases, I think it's similar, but as long as the patient knows going in that, you know, we're going to have to watch closely and we might have to revise, I don't think it's unreasonable to try to save the length on the first case.
Well, you stole my thunder. I agree with you. Because it's a multifactorial and a lot of variables. And so you have to look at each patient individually. You just can't lump all the dialysis patients because they'll have associated comorbidities. And that's why you need a list of risk factors for ulcers, the risk spectrum of vascular disease, linking the risk factors, and a problem wound. And what all of these factors that I have to look at to be sure that I considered all of them in making that decision. And more importantly, you got to look at the social history and who they are, whose they are, and all those things. And then you make that decision. That's why they call it the practice of medicine. It's still going to be part art and part science. We hope it's more science than art, but there is some art to it.
So he went on to get a split thickness skin graft, and this was him early last month. And that's him.
Shoestring catch.
Yeah.
Well, what's that?
Good result. Well,
I want to say a couple weeks, two weeks or three weeks. No, from that split.
Oh, 3 weeks.
It was a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks we're here.
No, the skin graft, I saw the patient actually last week, which was about 4 weeks out, is completely taken, 100% take. The picture is a little bit dark. I think it's the angle. I see what you're saying, but it's a complete take of the skin graft.
And Alex, you held it in place with a vac, right? You put the skin graft on and a vac onto L.
I had a question on the use of, a bioengineered skin that has keratinocytes and fibroblasts to do that versus a split-thickness skin graft. Any experience, thoughts?
Yeah, we've used them rather a lot. We have a huge experience with them, and my position on them now is that I would stick with a process of getting a wound vac to get them in as good shape as you can, together with everything else, and go right to a primary skin graft. I think that they're a form of delay, and delay is the enemy.
Okay.
I think there was a question about the viability of a skin graft in this area of the foot long-term, where certainly it's open to discussion whether it will last or not. Definitely better than the plantar surface of the foot.
first bypass graft that I did a pedal bypass I grafted in 1969 had exactly this result. And I lost him to follow-up 2 years later, and it was perfect.
So, Dr. Raisman, does this work? What's the long-term outcome of this? It seemed like he had a lot of comorbidities and all that, so it would have been...
Well, I think we probably know, all of us know that end-stage renal disease patients don't live too long. But as long as this survives until they die, I think it's a successful outcome if we give them a foot to walk on and ambulate and prolong their life being functional. I think that's a successful result.
I just want to end up by saying, so of the options that you have in these patients, and you heard a lot about earlier today, a bunch of things, but our plastic surgery, we don't, end-stage renal disease is a pretty strong contraindication to doing a free flap. Not that it can't ever work, but it often doesn't work, and it's a huge operation, and they don't even heal their harvest sites very well. So we don't tend to use free flaps. We would consider a free flap on a short foot, particularly if it involved the plantar aspect of the foot, outside of renal failure. But renal failure, I think you try really hard to avoid something like that. I think as long as you've got some good granulation covering the bone and you don't have bone sticking, you know, out of the end, I don't know, George or anybody else, you know, you could use full-thickness grafts. Or is there any advantage to using a more of a full-thickness skin graft and then, you know, a primary closure of the harvest site rather than using a split-thickness graft? Or
we've tried a few full-thickness skin grafts, and I didn't find them satisfactory in point of fact. I think that an 18,000th or something like that skin graft is the best thing. The two people that have the biggest experience, at least the last time I looked at the literature, were Chris Attinger and Maury Lepentolo, and I asked them both if they're still doing many free flaps, and they said that their free flap rate is down 95%, and they didn't do them on people with end-stage renal disease for the reasons you just said.
Alex, in light of your comments about his end-stage renal disease, did anybody discuss or consider not amputating the toe and opting for palliative care?
The question was if anybody considered just leaving him alone and letting him live with the black toe. I think the discussion centered, or not necessarily the discussion, but the evaluation was focused on the fact that this was a very functional individual. And he was fairly young, although he had he was on dialysis. He looked like he was functional, and we didn't really even discuss palliative care.
If I may be permitted one more comment, the question now, if you're going to be stratifying and doing all these things that we're going to be encouraged to do so we'll know, be able to compare one therapy to another, when do we say this foot here is healed? And from the time he showed up in the clinic in December to now, or do we say when all those little scabs come off the edge of the skin graft? Or do we wait and say, do we add an additional important criteria, time to complete healing, or do we add time to complete healing and resumption of normal function? What are the endpoints that we go to say, you can now pass from failure to success?
Excellent question. Yeah, I think right now the only outcome definition is complete healing being epithelialization of the ulcer or the wound. There's absolutely no outcome based on function at this point. But that's a great point.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.